Hello and welcome to the DPDL Talent Development Podcast, brought to you by Double Pass. I'm your host, Sarthak Dubey, and this is a show where we talk about grassroots football, picking the brains of some of the leading experts in the field of player development. We also bring to you the latest updates, trivia, and action from DPDL, our grassroots league here in India. So if you're a coach, or a parent, or a young player, or anyone who loves the game of football, this is a great podcast for you to tune in and make some notes. With that said, let's dive straight in. Enjoy the show. In today's episode, I have with me a very special guest who's joined us all the way from Belgium. He's a football manager who's worked at the highest level in the game. And when I say highest level, I mean the UEFA Champions League, the UEFA Europa League, and really at the top level in Belgium as well. He's a two-time Belgian first division champion, someone who with Anderlecht has gone on to win many games, produce many players, won the Belgian Super Cup, won the Belgian Cup, and also went on to FC Copenhagen and won the Danish Superliga title in his very first season as the manager there. He's a friend, he's a colleague, he's a mentor who's really guided me in this journey in Double Pass as well. So I'm delighted to welcome Ariel Jacobs on today's podcast. Ariel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sarthak. Hello from my side also, and thanks for the many kind words towards myself.
Thanks, Ariel. So before we dive into the serious questions, right, I wanted to ask you this. Has any player or any colleague of yours ever said that you come across as very intimidating as a person?
Yes. and I wouldn't know why. I wouldn't know why because it's not my purpose to be as such.
Yeah.
But I think that is one of the aspects that you need to have whatever age category you're coaching, seniors or youth. I think you need to be authentic. You need to be to show to your team how you really are and who you really are.
Absolutely. And the reason I asked you, Ariel, is because it's a personal story from my side. This is the first time that I saw you and I met you. This was 4 years ago in Belgium, where we met at a Double Pass conference. And, you know, I was presenting about the Indian football landscape through a presentation to the audience, and you were sitting in the audience, and, you know, I just looked at you and for me, because I've seen you on television, I've seen you manage games, I've seen you, you know, on television, for me, this was a bit of an intimidating experience that, okay, wow, this man is, I mean, he's sitting and watching me listen to this, this presentation about India. But then later that night, if you remember, we went out for dinner, and I think I had a very you know, long conversation with you and really picked your brains on quite a few things. And you asked me a lot of questions about India as well, you know, and that's when I realized that I think this is the most a very authentic, very warm, very approachable man. I mean, this is what I felt as well. So, of course, the intimidating part is what you come across as first. But I think you're a very warm man inside.
But the intimidating part, Sarthak, was just testing.
Okay.
It was a trial.
Nice. Ariel, so it was that night over dinner when I think when we were having a conversation about your experience at Anderlecht, at FC Copenhagen. I think you told me a story about a 16-year-old boy who went on to, you know, make a debut under you at Anderlecht. And I think this story really struck with me. And I think it's going to be a great story for our listeners as well, you know, because I think it's very inspiring and it has a lot of takeaways. So I think we can start today's podcast by you maybe reciting that story for us once again.
Well, I would say I wasn't ever expecting that a single decision that you can make as a senior professional coach could have such an impact. You, as a coach, you take decisions somewhat normal, seen from the public, from the fans, from the media. Some seem not so normal. I think mainly as a senior coach, you need to take a decision that is best for the team, that is best for the player involved. And afterwards, everything seems always so simple to explain. You should have done it. You shouldn't have done it. Whatever. As I said, I was maybe not aware that taking the decision to have a youngster of 16 years old and 2 weeks just being allowed to take part in the professional game would have had such an impact mainly on the player itself.
But why exactly did you decide to take this decision on a 16-year-old? And then, you know, how did that pay off for you as a manager?
Well, first of all, although football is a team sport, you take into account the individual qualities, both mental, social, and the football qualities of a player. Every week I went to see the second team, and I saw their player who still had a lot to learn, but who had, and certainly as a striker, one major quality. It happened that you didn't see him for a whole game, except one or two times present in the box and scoring goals. That's one of the two major items, purposes of football, avoiding goals and scoring goals. So at that moment, you don't take into account the age of a player. You simply take into account what you see, hoping that what you see is what you get. Yeah. And, you know, from a young player, everyone says always, it is a promising player. It will make it and so on. And still, when you take the decision to include that player in your game selection, everyone is so amazed, and even some were a little scared and saying, will he be able to bring that on that level? And the answer is simple. As long as you don't bring him, you don't know it. Yeah. So the only way to know it, of course, without taking any risks, not for yourself as a coach, because it's a risky job and it remains a risky job, but yeah, simply for the player, for his future, and for the team. Moreover, in this special circumstance, when I decided to take the player in the game squad, we had to play a decisive game at the end of our regular competition. The two first team were equal as 2 points, and so we had to play two trial games. And the first one ended on a draw at home. It was 1-1, so anything that could happen in the return game, we knew we had to score goals. So when making my analysis, I said to myself, I think that all ingredients are there to give the opportunity to the player to be present. And we'll see according to how the game is running, yeah, when he has to come into the game, if he needs to come into the game, in which circumstances, and so on.
Right.
And this is what happened. And of course, afterwards, when that player makes a starting first a good career on the level of the Belgian major league, and afterwards makes an international career, it seems to have been a good choice. That's simple.
Absolutely. So, just for our listeners who do not know which player we're talking about, this is Romelu Lukaku we're talking about, a player who has, yeah, you know, gone on to play for some of the leading clubs around the world, from Chelsea, Manchester United, Inter Milan, and back to Chelsea again. So I think this was a very inspiring story back then when I heard it as well, that, you know, to take a chance on such a young player Of course, there are a lot of external factors that you need to analyze as well. But I think it's really taking that risk, going for it. And then today, you have a player who overall has £300 million in transfer fees almost.
You don't manage the external factors. You don't know how the game will turn on. You can put some scenarios when the player was starting on the bench, when he should come in which circumstances. If we needed to score a goal, you can bring it in. If we needed to defend some advantage, he could come in because he had a speed, power, and so on. I was quite early reassured about the internal circumstances because he was not impressed at all. He showed a very positive mindset. And then afterwards, the coming two and a half years, when I was when he was part of the squad, I learned to know him as a guy with a very strong character.
Yep.
With an enormously positive mindset, wants to learn, always opening ears and eyes for anyone. I'm not talking only as a coach, which is normal that you help a player mainly on the mental and on the football side, but was also interested what the doctor told him to do, not to do, was interested what the physio, what my assistants. Nowadays, due to change of mentality, of course, generations change too. And I think that nowadays, very often you come in a situation when you see that a young player joins an first team squad, he's not in a subordinate situation, but he's very assertive and so on. This was not the case with Romelu. I could see that entering the dressing room for him for the first time, it was a presence and was a reward of the work he had done up to now. And so the blend, the mix between a squad that was a senior squad, older players, younger players, players from abroad, Belgian players and so on, and himself went very smoothly.
I think these are anecdotes from Lukaku's earlier days as a player, right? And I think any player who's listening to our podcast today, I think there's definitely a lot of learnings to take back from all the experiences that you just shared. You know, whether it's the mindset, whether it's the way he approached the health and performance side, you know, listening to the doctors, what to eat, what not to eat. I mean, all these things, it's amazing listening to this. And I think any player listening to our podcast today will definitely enjoy. So Ariel, speaking about player development, right? Now, he is a world-class talent. He turned out to be a world-class talent. Of course, we wouldn't know when you launched him, you wouldn't know that he's immediately going to make it. This is a period of time. But what, according to you, having your experience, having seen the game for so long, what are the fundamentals of player development? You know, what does it take to produce world-class players at a club or an academy?
Well, I don't like to talk about the world-class player. When Romelu was put in the first team, everyone thought that he might become a very good player, but I really think that no one could forecast the career that he had made. Me, certainly not.
Yeah.
I think that that's a major item of his development. The steps, carefully taken steps that he made in his career, I'll come back to that. Sure. But basically, it's always about having the right mindset, knowing that it's a difficult job that you have to do a lot of things for it, that you have to drop a lot of things for it. As I said earlier, you really need to open eyes and ears at any moment and never think that that it's done. You need to have some specific qualities, and that's what I said. I've seen games of Romelu in the second team as a youngster, but playing very often against players maybe only 4 years older than he was, not really senior players. But there were some games where he was totally inexistent. When I saw him stand on the pitch, but that was all. But as I said earlier, he touched two balls and he scored both of them. So that's a major specific quality.
Yeah.
Starting from that, in the 2.5 years that I had him close, but also afterwards when we kept contact, I could see that he kept on having that listening ear and watching everything that he needed. He remained ambitious. I remember that we had a phone call. What is it? Two seasons ago, when he became champion with Inter,
yeah,
and he was in the airport just leaving for holiday, and the closing words were okay. We champion. That's nice. That was our main target, but now up to the next one. So you can never say in a football career, I reached this level. And now it stops. If you do that, our football ecosystem is evolving so quickly that if you think that, well, it's over. A competitor takes your place. So he wants in all different layers of becoming a professional, he wants to be as close as possible to perfection. And that was one thing already when he was so young. I tried to warn him for. It's good to try to be perfect. And he, neither me, are saying that he's perfect.
Yeah.
That's an objective to keep on learning. But the danger of wanting to be perfect is that it becomes an obsession.
Obsession, yeah.
And it turns against you. But the mindset of saying, I want to become a better football player today than I was yesterday, permanently, analyzing the moves of big strikers, of huge names of world football constantly, that was so obvious for him. I don't think that many will do that, and he gets rewarded. Or a third thing for producing or becoming a good player, I think, did he do it alone? Was he helped by people from his environment? Was I won't say excellent, but really very good career planning.
Right.
The problem was when he came to see me and said that Chelsea was interested in having him. The problem was that Chelsea was the club of his heart. And right. Now the interest was something concrete. So this was an obvious situation. It was really a dream come true. And I thought at that time I had to warn him, because in Anderlecht he had a competition. In the ranking, he was number one. You had a number two, a number three. That was clear. But at that time, he was going to join Chelsea. And I told him, said, you know your competitors. You know them, of course. These were Drogba, Torres, Anelka, Sturridge. And I put him as fifth, as a new one. I said, Romelu, at that time, Jose Mourinho was the coach of Chelsea. And I said, suppose he plays with two central strikers. Suppose you keep two players, two strikers on the bench. That's four. And I'm still remembering as if it was yesterday. And he said, coach, the fifth one, suppose it's me, what does that mean? And I hadn't the opportunity to tell him. He told it myself. Me sitting in the stands, impossible. I said, Romelu, this is reality. Yep. You will face that situation because sometime you will get injured. You will be out of shape or whatsoever, and you yep. will not be even on the bench. He couldn't admit that. He had the first season, which was not a good one. But then when I'm talking about steps in his career, he was criticized because the promising star didn't make it in Chelsea. Many players suffer from that, but he had the mental strength to say, okay, what would be best to do now? And yeah. he went to a club where he had a kind of a guarantee to play, to learn, and to get used to English football.
Yeah.
He went to West Brom.
West Brom, yeah.
And he was performing well. I think that the second major good step in his career was that everyone was expecting him either to go back to Chelsea. At that time, they even spoke about Manchester United and whatsoever.
Yeah.
And he went to Everton, seeing it as a... And I remember we talked over the phone about it. He said, either it's an in-between step to hire, or, and at that time, not like now, Everton was a sub-top team. He said, if it's really my level, I can get used to play at that level and we'll see what happens afterwards.
Yeah.
And indeed, he did very well. And he went to after Everton, he
still United.
Got plenty of opportunities. So I think taking for yourself these decisions or knowing which people you can address to help you make choices, which are tremendously difficult to make.
Absolutely.
It's unpredictable for anyone, are so important also.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, these are wonderful anecdotes, Ariel, because these are the career planning part. I mean, people take that, you know, they probably don't give as much importance to it. But I think in this story, this case especially, career planning actually had a massive role, like you mentioned.
Talking about career planning of Romelu Lukaku, we're talking already when he was 17 up to 20 years old. I think it's important for younger players also. And we don't even talk about really a career because you don't know what might happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that at least in European culture, in my opinion, young players leave too early their native ground. I would say, I don't mean the country or whatsoever, but once they perform well for some time, And there is some interest of any higher ranked club, they feel attracted to go to that because they fear to have a missing link. If I don't go now, I will never go again.
Yeah.
And this is so important, certainly when you start down in the hierarchy, not knowing where it will bring you, so important both for the player, but also from the parents to help him and to consider things in a very objective, child-wise solution.
So Ariel, now just taking a step back, right? Now, I think these are wonderful anecdotes about Romelu Lukaku, but I feel the system of Belgium, the system that is really producing these players, has a lot to do with the development of talent from Belgium as well. So, you know, we've got a lot of Indian listeners on today's podcast, right? People who are working in the football ecosystem in India towards developing more and more players, whether it's coaches, whether it's parents, whether it's players themselves, academies. And I'm a firm believer that you obviously cannot just lift the system, what's working in Belgium, what's working in Germany, and just put it in India. That's not how it works. But of course, there are certain fundamentals, right? There are certain things that we can definitely learn from. So what, according to you, are those fundamentals? You know, what really drives a talent development system to the quality that Belgium is at the moment?
First of all, I want to stress what you just said, which is, in my opinion, very important. We might be well known, and the system might be known for producing some good players in Belgium, or having produced and still are producing. But as you said, lifting a way of working from one country to another, or even from one club to another, is really impossible.
Yeah,
useless. You can take in an advantage way. You can take some ideas, but always keep and start from the culture of the club or the country where you're working in.
Yeah.
That's fundamental in my idea. I'm very often asked by foreign clubs, by foreign federations, about the general idea of educating, developing players in Belgium and so on. You can talk about it, but don't say we'll take it over as such, because that really is a major danger. I must say that 30, 40 years ago, I was myself a sports director for the youth department of the Belgian Football Association. You bring in, that's one of your jobs, you bring in some major ideas as well for the club's proposals as for the federation. The only thing is that at that moment, and that's quite important, I felt a lot of resistance, because mainly in clubs, people, unless a couple of exceptions, but people were not convinced of developing an academy for developing players, because creating an academy, trying to make it a professional academy, it takes time.
Yep.
People want to see very, very quickly a result. Impossible. It costs, I won't say a lot of money, but for starting, it costs you, I would say, some kind of basic fees you need to invest in infrastructure, facilities. You need to invest in people. You need to invest in maybe in players. So when clubs at that time, 40 years ago, were facing the amount of money they had to invest for a project of which they couldn't forecast what it could be as a return on investment, it was a difficult step. And nowadays, since I would say 10, 15, 20 years, clubs are aware of that. Not all, but most of them. And you know how it works. When one club is successful with that process, well, a second one will try, a third one, and so little by little, it will grow. I say little by little, it takes a lot of time. I'm not talking about 1 year, 2 years. It's a decade. And we're in that phase for the moment. I would say that the only missing link that we have for the moment is that I think that the most of the Belgian youth academies are working well, are performing very well, are trying to bring to a certain level most of their players. The step that these players have to make towards the first team is a difficult one, because suddenly you also get a competition of foreign players that come in your country, and you have that eternal doubt about a young player without experience. People are in their evaluation of a player, they are more demanding on a locally developed player than on an imported player of whom everyone assumes that it must be a good player. And so that in my opinion, actually is kind of missing link in the pathway of a young player being developed in Belgium.
So Ariel, you were talking about academies, and you know, I think one of the heart of the academy is the coaching methodology, the coaches themselves, right? Better coaches ultimately will produce better players. And you, having coached at the highest level yourself, at a professional level, you know, what according to you are the fundamentals of you know, coaches who are working at the grassroots level? You mentioned about a lot of academies, a lot of grassroots level academies who are doing a good job. You know, so for some of our Indian coaches who are listening on today's show, you know, what would your words of wisdom or advice be to coaches who are working in the space of talent development, working with little kids day in, day out? You know, what should their aim be? Because these are two different worlds, professional football and grassroots, these are two different worlds. But what would your words of wisdom be for them?
Well, you should, first of all, we talked about in your introduction. As a youth coach, you should know who you are. I think that the basic, the fundamental requirement, you need to love children.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because on the one hand, it's teaching them how they should play football. But on the other hand, it's giving them a part of additional education to the education they get from their parents. So many youth coaches seem to forget about that. And the consequence is that they behave, they act, they coach as if they were coaching adults.
Yeah.
But instead, they're working with children. And you talked about methodology. It's totally different.
Yeah.
In my opinion, and if my life was to be done over again, I would still do the same process. Starting with coaching kids is so useful for your own development because it allows you to go through all the steps of a methodology. How to teach something to a human being. That one is a younger one, but afterwards you need it in a different way for adults. Yeah. So that's so important. I think that, and mainly players who had a rich professional career, right, make the step to the coaching side. And I think they miss some fundamentals of pedagogical approach, of methodology. Yeah. So coming back to that profile of a youth coach, you have to love children. You have to love football players. You have to be aware of the fact that in each age a child goes through, that a child thinks that he's able to do naturally, but also thinks he's not able to do, or even to think about. It's not only working with the feet, it's also a kind of a mind game. And very often, a youth coach always puts himself in the position of a coach of seniors. No, treat your players according to the age they have. Coach your players according to the age that they have, which is so important. That's about becoming a youth coach. When a club wants to take you as a youth coach, I think that first quality needs to be present. But then secondly, you must know that you are part of a whole system. That's like in school education. I think we think it's normal that a teacher, I would say of the fifth school year, does not give or approach his children as if they were university students. He knows that I have children, fifth year of school. We start there and we end there. And so why should football be different? And so you are part of a whole process as a youth coach. And you must know that when you are at the start, you're supposed to teach this and this and this. When you are halfway, you should teach that and that. And you know that exactly what your position is. So you have to you are part of a common philosophy, of a common methodology, and you have to respect your position in that. Part of the development, of course, we all want to win. And it's very nice when young players of 10 years old win a game or whatsoever. But most of all, the coach himself should be aware that winning is a nice thing, but what you teach and what you learn and how children learn is more important, as it is a process. Your victory of today, we forget about it next week. But what you learn today, we will remember it next week.
When I see coaches, I think what you are speaking about, your experience about youth coaches, that's exactly what we see here at DPDL as well. You know, we definitely come across youth coaches. Of course, people who have just started off, they are learning as well in their journey. But I think this is the fundamental point. The point where you're working with 8-year-olds or 10-year-olds. But as a coach, you sometimes tend to forget that and you treat them as you treat yourself as a first team coach. And then, you know, it's about changing that mindset. And we see that. We see that at the league as well. So I think this is a great learning for the listeners to take back for sure. Speaking of coaches, Ariel, while coaches can get absolutely wild on the touchline, even at our DPDL level, which is under 8s and under 10s and under 12s, I think our parents, the ones who really are the ones who on the touchlines during training sessions, during matches as well, I think they tend to get even more excited than the coaches. Now, is that a phenomenon that you see in Belgium as well? Or is this something that we see only in India?
Only in India. No, it's, I would say, unfortunately, it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
Is it normal nowadays? I would say yes.
Yeah.
I was fortunate, but that's so many decades ago, not to start playing football at 6, but at 12.
Okay.
So I had no organized training sessions before the age of 12.
Right.
And you would say, oh, you must have been missing a lot. No. I didn't miss anything. I got a lot of practice because you couldn't play football before the age of 12. You wanted to practice football. And what did you do? You went to some open area and we organized games by ourselves. We played 2 versus 2, 3 versus 2, 7 versus 7, 24 versus 27, because when the amount of kids grew, yeah, that was a situation.
Okay.
And we were not coached, but we had to learn by ourselves. If I wanted to dribble 5 times, 1, 2, 3, 4 opponents, and it didn't work, I didn't have a coach who told me, look, this is not good. My teammate said, give us your ball. Don't do that anymore, and so on. And then it's up to you to decide, are they right? Are they wrong? What should I do? We can discuss about it and whatsoever. And now you have a coach who says to everyone, I don't want to see you dribbling. And so you lose these players who are artists and who want to dribble. So that's something that that you lose. But there was a second point where talking about decades ago, I was fortunate. My father never came to see any training session, and he hardly came to see a game.
Okay.
Because it was not done. Maybe I was missing something. Seeing what happens now, I didn't miss anything, because you had to take care of yourself on your own. Now, situation is, world, life, society evolves, and the situation is as such. The I won't say the problem of the parents, but the presence of the parents is not only in football. I think that the presence of the parents is more apparent also in school, in other sports, in other activities and whatsoever. You have to deal with it. They are not always friends, but should we fight them? No. I think what we shouldn't forget, it's about one thing, one person, the child.
Yep.
And parents hope to be and to have the best for their child, and a club, its members, the coaches also have the obligation to make the best out of a young child. So I think they need to, in present times, they need to work together. And I think that a lot of the possible problems, you will always have the problems, but a lot of problems can be avoided when both parties know exactly what they should do for the other party and what they can expect from the other party.
Yep.
I think that it starts in the beginning of the season that a club should be clear towards its parents. Look, you put your child here. What can you expect?
Yeah.
From educational point of view, from football-wise, mentally, what we are doing, and so on. I think that on academy level, you have a message for all the parents of all the age categories. What is our club? What is our club? What is our academy? What is our academy standing for? How do we want to do it? Who's who? And so on. And then a specific one, because coaching, we said it earlier, a 10-year-old or an 80-year-old is totally different. The ambitions of a 10-year-old and the parents are totally different from the ambitions of an 18-year-old who might be knocking on the door of the first team of the local club or having a transfer wherever. So I think we need, above all, in the start of the season, to create the right setting, what we can expect from both parties, first of all. And then secondly, I think that splitting up the both parties is not good. So I think that at least two half yearly kind of appraisal talks between the coach and the parents, together with the child according to his age, should simply be a guidance for the parents how the child is doing. And in that appraisal talks, the parents should also have the opportunity to say how the kid is feeling, what he gets at the club, how the kid is transmitting that or translating that when they talk about it at home.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of openness between the two parties involved is so crucial.
Absolutely. So when parents really... What I see, especially at the league, right? These are parents who are heavily involved with the development of the child. You know, and in your case, like you mentioned, I think that's one extreme example where your father was, like you said, very few training sessions or games that he watched. But now it's a completely different picture, whether it's in India, whether it's in Belgium, anywhere across the world. Parents are, I mean, this child, he or she is probably spending 10 to 15% of their time outside of home with their friends or at school. But a majority of their development actually happens at home, right? Where the parents are directly impacting the path that this child is going to take, whether it's in football, whether it's elsewhere. So at home, right, especially at home, what according to you are some of the characteristics that, especially for young children, parents must show support towards? You know, what according to you is something that parents should keep in mind, especially with if they have a child that loves the game and wants to play football?
Well, it can happen that your child that you have a child who loves football, and that neither parents ever practiced football and don't know anything about football.
Yeah, that happens.
And maybe that's a good thing, because then at least they should not be talking about, certainly at a younger age, about the technical aspects of football, because that should be the academy and the coaches should be responsible for that. But I think that parents can take care, I would say, of the more hidden part of being a sportsman. I think that first of all, a parent is there to encourage a child. It can be that a child comes home after a training session, after a game, and it didn't go well, or during a game he was missing a chance, or he got a goal which was his fault. Parents should be there at that moment just to support them, to help them, to keep encouraging him, without becoming the real supporter, because a real supporter, a real fan, he supports more or less in a blindly way. It's show concern to the situation of your child, being male or female. I think there are many situations in which you have to console your child. There can be situation when a child is so positive about performance and whatsoever, that you have to calm him down. I think you can help a lot by practicing sports in general, football in particular, means that you have to show some discipline about being present in time, coming in time, sitting in the same dressing room, taking a shower, if possible, after a training session, after a game. You need to have a fit body, so you can't afford, even as a child, to eat anything. So I think that in all these more or less, what I would say, hidden aspects, as a parent, you can play such an important and enormous role. And I fear that most parents behave on the side that is seen by everyone, being present in training sessions and on match days, and not enough the hidden side.
Yeah. So I think if the parents who are listening into this podcast, I think those were words of wisdom. I think that strikes with every single parent at DPDL. So thanks for that, Ariel. I think that was very helpful for all the parents, especially listening in. Now, you've had a long and distinguished career, Ariel. You know, you've worked at some of the top clubs in Europe. You've worked with you've managed games in the top competitions in Europe as well. I'm sure it always hasn't been an upwards journey for you. Also, it's been ups and downs and probably many downs as well. So I think one question that I personally wanted to ask you, what has been the most challenging moment or phase of your career as a coach? And you know, what learnings did you take out of it to make you a better manager or a better person? And are those points something that we here in the Indian football ecosystem can have some learnings from?
Well, first of all, I think you need to be ready to learn every day. I know some colleagues who say, look, I think I know the football wisdom. and what it's all about. So that's a first major error. You need to be aware that you will be learning every day. It's managing, and I don't like the word managing for people, but leading people or giving lead to people is something you can't learn in books. It's out of practice, and maybe you can transmit your learnings to others, but you never have two cases the same. I said everything that has been done by myself, by colleagues of my staff concerning Romelu Lukaku, and which ended very well. If tomorrow there is a new one, you can't apply the same theory.
Correct.
Because every case is totally different. It's a job which is you lead a team on the one side, your staff, which is a team also, and you lead your second team being players, but being a coach in professional area is a very lonely job. I used to take distance or not from my group. When things are going well, everyone, certainly outside of the club and players, think, oh, you know, four wins in a row, good performances, positive critics in the media, fans are happy, board is happy, chairman is happy, and so on. Don't think it's an easy period. It's a dangerous one. Because you need to foresee what will be coming. Well, we talked since the beginning of our interview about authenticity of a coach. I think that showing that authenticity throughout your career is so important. I think it's a kind of guidance for yourself. I think that you face a lot of pressure. You face a lot of pressure during the week preparing your team with individual or group problems, tactical, relation-wise. Close to the weekend, you have the pressure that grows coming from inside, from board, from players, from media outside, from fans and so on. I think that in all that pressure, what helped me a lot as a person, because in fact it has nothing to do with coaching, is to try in all respects to keep your emotional stability. It's not easy. It's easier said than done. That's the second major important part. Your relationship to your staff is so important. They help you. So I think you need to make clear agreements with them, who's doing what and what you expect really. Give the possibility to your staff to work, give them that freedom in a controlled way by yourself. Towards your players, I would say I learned that a period where you have a couple of wins after each other seems to be an easy period, but it's a dangerous one, because suddenly you can really feel that in your club, that everything's going well, nothing can happen, and so on. And it's so difficult if there is only one person there to try to not to stop, because you also hope that it goes on, but simply to put some red lights or orange lights to warn people. Nobody believes you. So I learned that when things are going well, as a coach, as a leader, you need to be on top of your group daily. It can seem funny, but when things are going well, it asks more energy from you.
Yep.
Just to keep the focus. So be on top of your squad and control everything. Don't allow one or a couple of players to get out of that controlled situation. On the contrary, when things are going badly, show that you're part of them. They are suffering because they're performing not well. We're losing. They are not losing alone. The coach and the staff are losing also. So really physically show that you're amongst them and that we all together, we need to be all together to try to get out of that bad situation. As a matter of fact, you can really feel bad inside after a bad performance, after a bad couple of games lost and so on. You feel hurt, you feel bad. But when you want to be amongst your players, you should not show what you really feel inside. On the contrary, if you want to be there to help them, you need to be an example. You need to show that you're not done at all, that you see some perspectives. You have to show initiative, readiness, and fighting spirit, although you feel differently inside. It's not easy. Once again, it's easier said than done, but it's a reality. It's the way in which the perception of the players of you is assimilated by your players. And I think, once again, talking about authenticity, these are moments when things are going well, are going bad, where be authentic and show your real emotions. If you're defeated, if you're down, if you feel unlucky and whatsoever, you should put the framework, because it's not the referee, it's not the pitch and whatever, not talking about that, but simply show your emotion, your concern of them in a bad or in a more enjoying situation.
And Ariel, has there ever been any one such moment that has stood out for you in your career as the most difficult phase, which you had to kind of use these tactics that you just, the tactics of psychology that you just mentioned? Has there ever been one particular moment like this for you?
Yeah, they happen quite frequently, because I've been coaching in smaller clubs. And if you take it over 1 month, 4 games in a smaller club, in the middle or down in the ranking, it's normal that you only win once a month. So you know that the other situation, you have 3 weeks, you have to fight to compete, where the mood in the squad, in the club is not that good. Maybe expectations are not so high either. I won't say it's easier. I won't say it's more difficult, but you have to adapt to that situation. Working in top teams like Anderlecht or Copenhagen, you know that every game you have to be present and you're supposed to win.
Yeah.
So don't find any excuses, because very often you have the best facilities, the best circumstances. I won't say the best team, but a good team. You have a good staff and whatsoever. So don't complain about that. Talking about Anderlecht, talking about Copenhagen, yeah. You have a bad performance, together or not with a loss. You can feel everywhere in the training, on the training ground in the club, that something is going on. And you know that this situation cannot last for 2 or 3 weeks, because then little by little, from inside, but also helped by what you hear from fans, what you read in newspapers and so on, that situation can go wrong very, very quickly. You need in any circumstance to keep on analyzing in a very objective way, which are the reasons why things are not going well, and especially try to focus on that to try to improve.
Yeah.
And sometimes making improvements is not 50%. It can only be a couple of percent, and try to grasp these little percentage to try to go up again. In fact, if you analyze it, it's a quite crazy job. If things going well, you need to slow down. You need to avoid slowdown. And if things are going badly, you need to speed up.
I can't even imagine the pressure that you may have been under, you know, especially those because you had your often,
very often, Sartak, people talk about pressure must be enormous and so on, and still there's still an enormous difference, let's say, between Anderlecht and Manchester City, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Inter Milan. I'm wondering what must it be in these cases. You can't go any worse.
Yeah.
But when any player from my squad complains about pressure, or a member of the staff, you have to tell them they're not where they should be. Because when you play football at any level, society has evolved that you can expect some pressure. In top clubs, even in a smaller country like Belgium, that pressure is very high. But you need to accept it and to show resilience and will to fight against that. So don't create any additional pressure. It's my job as a coach to try to, I won't say put in quarantine nowadays, my team, and to protect them. And sometimes you have to, in order to protect your team, to take the responsibility of something that went wrong.
True.
But then in your turn, you have to make your team inside, in the inner circle of your team, co-responsible of things not working well.
True. Well, Ariel, I think there's been so much, you know, so much good information and knowledge that we've taken from today's podcast. I think all the way from your stories, your anecdotes about Romelu Lukaku, and how you raised him through the ranks at Anderlecht, all the way to your words of wisdom for coaches, for parents, you know, people who are actively working towards player development. I think we will take all of this as feedback here in a country like India that's developing, that's trying to take baby steps towards maybe being at a World Cup one day. I think these are points that definitely help. And in the near future, if you know the COVID situation gets better and everything stabilizes, I think we would love to have you here at DPDL, you know, watching the games, whether it's even under 8s and under 10s, you know, the way they play in small-sided games of, you know, 5v5, 7v7, we make them play. You know, just having you over here, if that opportunity arises, I think it'll be great. And then maybe we can do another podcast live together in the city of Bangalore.
It would be my pleasure, believe me.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you. Thanks for your time, Ariel. I think this was very helpful and very useful as well.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And to all of you, I'm not wishing you good luck. Good luck. You need it when you coach professionals, but enjoy what you're doing, because working with kids is a really nice job.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Thanks for listening in. So much to learn and so much to absorb from that episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Catch us again on the DPDL Talent Development Podcast as we bring to you another episode with a leading expert. Until then, we'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or shoot us an email at developmentleague@doublepass.com. That's developmentleague@doublepass.com. Take care and see you next time.